Just to remind everybody, this fall in our Bible class here, we've been studying about heaven, and we're actually 3 weeks behind because of a delay that I went through with it. But the timing for this particular study tonight is not real bad, because it causes us to think about the fact that time does have its limitations. And it causes us, I believe, to try to remember that we need a perspective on life and on values and on hope that takes in something more than just this present moment and what I see around me right now. And in that way, I hope it will be helpful to us. This is the episode that involves the rich man and Lazarus. It relates to our study about heaven, because very often people take this passage as the main material in the Bible about what happens between our passing from this world and the resurrection and the judgment. I'm going to consider this passage, because people do relate it like that. I'm going to ask you to try to think about it from a different viewpoint tonight. And I believe it will be, this exercise will be helpful for us. Be well, probably, for me to just read it. Just to start with, Luke 16, verses 19 to the end of the chapter. And most of you in this class are familiar with this passage. The Lord says, "There was a rich man who was clothed in purple and fine linen, who feasted sumptuously every day. And at his gate was laid a poor man named Lazarus, covered with sores, who desired to be fed with what fell from the rich man's table. Moreover, even the dogs came and licked his sores. The poor man died and was carried by the angels to Abraham's," the ESV uses the phrase Abraham's side, for reasons I'll explain in a minute, "to Abraham's bosom" will be more familiar to most of you. "The rich man also died and was buried. And in Hades, being in torment, he lifted up his eyes and saw Abraham far off and Lazarus at his side. And he called out, 'Father Abraham, have mercy on me, and send Lazarus to dip the end of his finger in water and cool my tongue, for I'm in anguish in this flame.' But Abraham said, 'Child, remember that you in your lifetime received your good things, and Lazarus in like manner bad things. But now he is comforted here, and you are in anguish. And besides all this, between us and you, a great chasm has been fixed, in order that those who would pass from here to you may not be able, and none may cross from there to us.' And he said, 'Then I beg you, Father, to send him to my father's house, for I have five brothers, so that he may warn them that they not come into this place of torment.' But Abraham said, 'They have Moses and the prophets. Let them hear them.' And he said, 'No, Father Abraham, but if someone goes to them from the dead, they will repent.' He said to him, 'If they do not hear Moses and the prophets, neither will they be convinced if someone should rise from the dead.'" I want to take one phrase from this to start with, and then get into the line of thought. Notice how in this passage the rich man says in verse 30 that if someone would go to them from the dead, it would make the difference. Change the thought for just a slightly in your mind, and think, if you and I find ourselves wondering, If someone would just come to us from the dead and tell us what it's like there now, it would be easier for me to believe there's life beyond this. Do you ever find yourself thinking that way? And have you noticed in all of our studies about heaven, the caution or the hesitation the Bible takes to try to explain things to us that we're in no position right now to understand? We want the details. And it doesn't focus on that. It focuses on how we think about life now and how that will impact our destiny later on. And I wonder if there's not some of that in our passage. We don't have long enough. I know that already. So let's get into our study then this way. We start with one issue. An interesting thing about this in starting in, is this a parable or is it not? What do you think? If it were a parable, would it make a difference in the truth that we take away from this passage? Would it make a difference in how, what kind of application we would make of its lessons? I find this often included in discussions of parables and often referred to this way because there is the idea, the pretty obvious idea, that we are meant to take something that happens in the lives of these characters and make an application of it to ours. So in that, but if it is a parable, it doesn't say so. And this would be the only one of the Lord's parables, if it is, where the characters are given proper names. Abraham and Lazarus, and then the rich man in the early Latin translation, Latin Vulgate, I believe, is the rich man is given a name, and you'll find him referred to as Dives sometimes. So it's interesting in that way to think about it. And I say this, if it is a parable, then it might be more acceptable in my thinking for us to make this more about what life is like after death. I have some hesitation about that. And I hope you'll think about the caution with it in that way. A more important question, is this passage just an isolated text thrown in by Luke here in this part of his record, or is it part of a broader line of thought in the context? That seems important to me in determining what the main lesson here is meant to be. So I ask you to reflect back a little bit on the passage, the things leading up to this in this whole discussion. The ones who try to take the Old Testament resource from which this discussion might come usually attach it to Deuteronomy chapter 24 and Deuteronomy chapter 28, which are passages that have to do with the terms of the old covenant. If you hear this and if you obey my voice, if you keep this covenant, then you'll prosper and you'll prosper and prosper. And if you thought of it that way, you can see that it might cause you to think a certain way about wealth and about money, and especially if you were a part of the power structure of Israel at the time of Jesus, you might think that if the Lord gave you that wealth or that money, it was because He was pleased with you. Brother Jim?
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good point. Now, if you think about this passage in that way, it would explain how at verse 18 and 19, if you take it from Deuteronomy, this would be from Deuteronomy 24, and then the broader discussion of the terms of the covenant, the prosperity idea. If you look at it, however, in terms of the discussion that has gone on leading up to this, notice that Jesus has taught the disciple, really back up to the end of chapter 14. You kind of get where I'm coming from with this. In chapter 14 of Luke, there's been the discussion about counting the cost of discipleship, of following Jesus. At verses 25 and following, you notice this. And the idea has been that a disciple of the Lord is someone who has decided that it's worth whatever it takes. And he's willing to invest everything he has in his loyalty to Jesus. He's willing to, if it costs father and mother, brother, sister, whatever, then he sees that's worth it. Now notice in chapter 15, there is the prodigal son and the lost coin, the lost sheep, and so forth. But the discussion really started at verses 1 and 2, chapter 15, with the publicans and sinners drawing near to Jesus and the Pharisees and scribes grumbling. I'm going to paraphrase a bit. This man receives people like that. So there is a looking down, a certain way of valuing people, or maybe more precisely devaluing people, that is running in the background. And that leads to all the discussion in chapter 15, if you notice in this text. And we're left with the older brother and the question about what he'll do that comes up at the end of that chapter. In chapter 16 beginning, there's the story of the rich man who has this steward who hears about wasting his possession, and he calls the dishonest steward and tells him he's going to take the job away from him. And the dishonest steward goes from one to another of the debtors to his master, and he gives them half-price deals, and the master commends the way this guy, even in his dishonesty, he's shrewd enough that he knows to use opportunity and what he has in order to make friends. And Jesus makes the point that it would be well if his disciples were wise enough to invest or to use things, I'll say it that way, in order to have eternal dwellings. Verse 9 said, and he points out that one is faithful in little, is faithful in much in that way. The Pharisees in verse 14 who hear this are lovers of money. And they hear these things and they ridicule Jesus. It's foolish to them to suggest that you can't serve two masters, and that somehow or another wealth could become a rival to God. And Jesus has rebuked them for that. He's talked about how the kingdom can't be entered or taken by force. Then he talks about the illustration with divorce and adultery and so forth in verse 18. And then that leads up to our parable. I want at least to gently suggest that if we were to look at the story of the rich man and Lazarus in the setting of a broader discussion which tells us to think in terms of eternal values, to think in terms of valuing what will be then enough to let that fashion how we think and act now, that might be a context within which this story can be processed best in our minds. Otherwise, we have the Lord talking about why he deserves loyalty, or why he's worth the cost, and then why people are to be valued and sought and rejoiced over, and then why the things we have now should be used to secure an eternal home and dwelling, and then the way the Pharisees ridiculed him over it and so forth, and then talking about something totally different, where the dead are. And I wonder if it wouldn't be better to think in the terms of the broader context. So here would be the most important issue. Let me just ask you this one. If you're reading the story of the rich man and Lazarus that we've read tonight, whether you put it in its setting or not, what would you take as the main lesson that readers are meant to draw from this passage? Just in the reading of it and thinking about it, what would you think would be the main way the Lord meant for it to impact us when we hear it? Dennis? All right, today is the day of salvation, Dennis said. That'd be one thing. Justin? All right, the reversal of expectations that takes place here would be a huge issue. I mean, how people look in terms of their standing and possessions and so forth in this world is not necessarily how they look after a while on the other side. You see, great reversal, Eddie. All right, as death finds you, so is the judgment. There is a destiny fixed here, isn't there? Okay, anybody else? Alan? Can't serve two masters. All right, you can't serve two masters. That would set it in its immediate context very, very well, it seems like. You can't serve two masters. The at least in our thinking of it this way, I can look at it and I can see the danger of okay, yes, I mean. I was just going to say, your parallel, it's got the same type of parallel that Paul uses in 2 Corinthians, where he's talking about the rich will be poor and the poor will be rich. Okay. Because of those that live a worldly life. All right. The idea that someone looks at Jesus who was rich and he became poor so that we, through his poverty, might become rich, that should affect how we look at the value and the destiny of persons when we look at this passage here. I can see some of that all through it. I think it's a warning against the kind of materialistic, uncaring attitude that someone may have toward another person that comes from believing that God rewards people materially and that being well off now is a sign of God's approval. I think that may be where this is headed. All right, let's work our way through the text a little bit now. To start with, contrast how the rich man and Lazarus look on this side. And by on this side, I'm talking about on this side of the river on this side of death. How do they look? The rich man to start with is, well, he's rich. He is has the most luxurious clothing. Purple and fine linen were the most expensive and luxurious attire that could be worn. He has all the best to eat. He feasts sumptuously, not on holidays, but every day. It's a way of life for him. If you notice that, notice he has a gate, which means he has maybe a fine house, or he has an estate. If you think of it that way, so he's rich. He has the finest clothing, the best food, and the great security of a home. Now look at the other man. He's not only poor, but destitutely so. He is helpless in that he is laid at the gate of the other man. He is in poor health because he is covered, it says he's covered with sores. He has nothing to eat because he desires to be fed with what falls from the rich man's table. And he is in pitiable condition because the dogs come and lick his sores. I can't imagine a more miserable description of a situation, can you, than that is. The contrast between the two is the point, though, it seems like. And the rich man has not paid any attention to Lazarus. Lazarus' name, by the way, means God is my help. That idea. But the rich man hasn't noticed him in this situation. Now, that contrast, it seems to me, is going to be a powerful part of the lesson, Jim. Right. Yeah. Yes. Very good point. I'm going to comment about that before we get through. But
when I was in India in 71, I remember teaching in this school there. Every one student in that class or school, everybody in America is rich.
Yeah. Yeah.
But now it's better if they can have these schools there because they don't want to go back.
Yes.
I
appreciate especially your point about Abraham himself having been very, very wealthy and still a man of faith. It is not the being rich or poor that's the point here, but the contrast between the two and the fact that the one man doesn't notice the other man. That's essential for the lesson here. Now, having contrasted the two in your mind, identify the great leveling experience for these two men. And it's so impressive the way this is, Jesus gathers this up in one statement in his teaching here. In verse 22, what is the great leveling experience? They both die. Doesn't it impress you where it says, the poor man died and was carried by the angels to Abraham's side? By the way, isn't that a beautiful... The poor man didn't die and become an angel. He died and he was carried by the angels to Abraham's side. On the other, the rich man also died. And what? And was buried. That's a pretty big difference in description right there. Now, having noticed that one event that happens to us all, as Ecclesiastes puts it, look now at the contrast between how things looked for these two men on the other side. The rich man first is as needy as the poor man was on this side. And if you look at it, in Hades, is in torment. He lifts up his eyes. He sees Abraham afar off and Lazarus in his bosom at his side. He cries out for mercy like perhaps the poor man had done at his gate all of these years. Just an act of mercy is described with to dip the end of his finger in water to cool my tongue. And please read this as a way of describing the misery that the man feels that he is in here. And on the other hand, think about Lazarus. He's now at Abraham's side, and I've used that phrase, so let me describe the thought here. The thinking is that at a feast in their time, the custom was to have a low table and to have a mat or a flat mat to recline on one arm with the feet out behind them, relaxing and eating the meal in that way, so that the place of greatest honor would be, and maybe I have them turn around, but would be the man on the right here, and he would be reclined, but he would be in Abraham's bosom. He would be the one in the place of privilege at a banquet, in other words. So the man who had been at the gate begging for food is now pictured as the guest of honor at a great banquet. It is not merely a contrast in place, it's also a contrast in experience that we're intended to recognize here. The poor man who is now in this position of great honor and wealth does not seem to be bothered by the fact that there is on the other side of the great gulf a rich man who finds himself in the torment of regret. Do you notice that? The poor man who has been ignored at the rich man's gate is now an honored guest at a feast, and he's not distracted. And when you notice the conversation, it goes on not between the rich man and the poor man, but between the rich man and Abraham. So both men in this story have regarded Abraham as their father or their ancestor, and he's the one who is the point of reference in the story. And the rich man is told here that you, in your lifetime, received your good things, and Lazarus in like manner bad things. But now he is comforted here, and you are in anguish. I think that is the contrast, the reversal, that is the lesson of our passage that really stands out to me. Now, I will say, and I think this deserves recognition by all of us, there are some assumptions about the other side and what it's like that are essential to the contrast drawn in this story. And these should cause us to stop and think and to show some reverence for the situation and to contemplate ourselves in relation to it. There is an unseen realm referred to as Hades. In the King James, it's translated hell, and it's probably a poor translation in this case. Hades is the transliteration of the Greek word into English letters. The word for hell would be Gehenna. And the Hades is parallel, apparently, to the Old Testament word you'll find translated as Sheol, the darkness or the unseen realm. Notice that either in torment or in comfort, and then either in anguish or at Abraham's side. And frequently when people focus on this passage as where the dead are, then it will be here's the realm of Hades, and here is Abraham's bosom or paradise, and here is Tartarus, the term for a word for the place of the those who don't have hope of life in the unseen realm. It's a term used in 2 Peter 2 and verse 4, and in that way. I'm not as much arguing with that picture as I am simply mentioning that is the assumption, the Jewish assumption used in this passage in order to teach the great lesson that is emphasized here. There is, in the persons in the story, there is identity and consciousness and memory on the other side. That's a part of the story here. And that should make us stop and think. And then there is no crossing from one to the other. There is the great chasm fixed where there is no crossing from one to the other. Now, the idea generally taken is, all right, that this is the picture until resurrection and judgment. And then there would be the eternal circumstance of either heaven or hell for those who are away from God. That idea. Now, this passage does not mention those things. It mentions these things, and we take them as the main lesson here. Very quickly, since I heard bell number one, that means I have 10 more minutes, doesn't it? I think it does. Then think about this. Who am I in this story? Do you think, obviously I'm not Abraham. I'm old, but not that much. No matter what Madden thinks, I'm not Abraham. And so, am I the rich man, or the poor man, or am I one of the five brothers? in verses 27 through 31, who am still on this side and am meant to think about how I am regarding things and people and the other side in relation to the Lord. I think that may be the closest thing. So let me finish this quickly about how might our perspective be impacted by the lessons in this story. And obviously I'm doing a surface thing here. We needed more time for this. First thing, how we look at people, how we value people. Is my opinion of the worth of a person formed based on what kind of job, what kind of house, what kind of car, what kind of clothing, what kind of physical circumstance, how attractive or not so physically, what age someone is or not. It strikes me that that's a powerfully important question about, you know, what determines most how those people are valued, what kind of person I am when I look at them. And that's what Jesus is saying in this passage, first and maybe foremost, I'm not sure. Second, it should impact what we care about. What if this man, this rich man, had cared about how his brother's situation was on this side while he was here? It's too bad he waited till he was on the other side. What we make of the circumstances of life, Jim mentioned earlier, it's not whether the person is rich or not, or whether he's healthy or sick, or whether he's looked up to and admired, or whether he's not on the top 10 persons of the year list. That's not what makes all the difference in how one's life turns out. It's instead what he considers his good things to be, and when he thinks his good things are going to be real. And then this should make a difference in how we think of faith. Do we think faith comes by having some experience that gave us a glimpse beyond death, or that faith comes from having somebody come back and miraculously reveal something to us? Or do we think that no matter who we are, faith comes from the Word of the Lord and then our response to it? I think those things. I see Tim can't wait to open the door back there, so I better quit. Thank you guys so much for being with us tonight. And this is a good way for us to maybe consider gradually, so all right here. Is it really what heaven is like? It'll make the difference in me, or what I think about what it would be to be there that makes a difference. I hope all of you had a... I hope you were good boys and girls. I hope Santa found you that way. And I hope you have a really happy New Year. Appreciate you being a part of our class. Let's pray before we go.